Meeting is now being recorded.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming on the call. One of our last plenary calls here. We're just trying to mop up the last bit of this report and get it out. Is there anyone on the phone that is not on the Adobe Connect?
Yes, so Carlos is on the phone only, sorry.
Thanks, Carlos. And does anyone have an update to their statement of interest? All right, hearing none, I'm going to just pass the microphone to Jordan Buchanan.
Dwyer, what am I supposed to be talking about? Sorry, I can't see Adobe Connect.
Oh, sorry. Updates to recommendation 12.
I can we jump in the agenda to something where I don't need to see for a second, and I should be in a normal office in like 10 minutes.
Okay, sure. Well, let's jump to David and Drew then.
Okay. Why don't I'll give a high profile overview of this, and then I'll let David dive into the specifics of what we're now calling Recommendation 17. So just to clarify, with the email traffic back and forth, the overall proposal going on right now is that no matter what, we would promote what we now call Recommendation 15, which calls for enhanced contractual requirements, which would give ICANN compliance the tools it needs to enforce against systemic abuse, and really raise the stakes where they need to be because of the gaps we identified in the safeguards put in place as part of the new GTLD program. And so, no matter what, we've already approved that one unanimously, but there's right now before us a potential to improve upon that. Jordan's intention to improve upon that was to then obviate the need for Recommendation 17. However, there's also a point to be made that we could improve it with Jordan's proposed language, and I think some added additional language from David, regardless of whether or not we approve Recommendation 17 in the end or regardless of whether Recommendation 17 is split. But either way, that's one component is certainly improving that contractual language. And then a second component is that in addition to ICANN compliance, being able to better address systemic abuse and having those tools, we are discussing again whether or not there should also be a DADRP that would provide another mechanism to address systemic abuse. I think Carlton did a really great job at, for those of you who read that email, at addressing what actually is intended here, even though maybe we didn't do a good enough job in the language. But basically, you would have additional contractual language that would give life to the DADRP. And so that would be the those would be the abuse components of the contract that a DADRP would be used to enforce against. So there'd be two different means here to enforce against the systemic abuse that is currently plaguing the DNS and that our data has demonstrated. And so that's the big high profile overview, and then I will let David dive into the specifics.
I can dive in. How do you want to do this? Do you want to look at Recommendation 15 first and then Recommendation 17, or?
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, and then I can even
that address it makes sense.
If we do that one first. Yeah, let's do that one first, actually, since that would be the prerequisite anyway. And I would just say too, there's certainly been confusion that's because of us, because there were originally different ways we were looking at doing this, whether 17 would actually be something that would exist before 15, things like that. But where we actually landed is no matter what, Recommendation 15 would be the prerequisite. And so here with Recommendation 15 and Jean-Baptiste Keith, maybe you might be the best one to chime in. Is everything in orange and green the new language?
Yes, that's, well, I can say that because everything in orange and green is new language. Orange.
Oh, that's right, because you created this talk.
It's Jordan's, and the green bit's mine, David.
Okay, so we already approved this one a while back. So the improvements upon this one are, putting in more teeth for what the criteria would be with regard to creating an enforceable contract that would hopefully prevent systemic abuse and then certainly allow ICANN compliance to go after those who were associated with systemic abuse and doing nothing to abate this sort of abuse. And it's along the lines of what we've seen, of course, with .science and .top and other TLDs called out in the report. And I'll just give everybody a moment to read it. And then, David, if you want to chime in about your edits, and I know that Jordan may want to when he hops back on the call.
I'm on the call. I just don't have Adobe Connect powers. My Adobe Connect is stuck connecting. Yeah, I guess I can't have both phone and data at the same time, so... Okay, so I'll just add, which I think is an important point. My edits here were intended as a consolidation of 17 and 15, intended to take the same sort of threshold that was provided in 17 that David had suggested, that 10% threshold, and instead make that, introduce some triggers, both for ICANN to automatically begin compliance inquiries, as well as then to create a presumption that, if you get to more than 10% of use, you sort of presume that the registry is doing something wrong unless they have to rebut that presumption instead of presuming that they're doing something right, which is, I think, what is correctly the general case. That the ICANN has to prove that the registry is doing something wrong. If you get enough abuse in the TLD, it seems reasonable to say, no, the tables have turned now. The registry has to show that it's actually taking strong efforts to prevent abuse in the registry or that the finding of abuse is incorrect. But that was intended as a consolidation with 17 in order to make 17 unnecessary. I actually don't think, procedurally, since we're just supposed to be reacting to public comments, no one suggested any of these changes to 15. So unless we're doing this as a consolidation with 17, I actually don't think procedurally we have a basis to make any of these changes. So I would just add, my view is pretty strongly, this makes total sense as a consolidation with 17, but if we're going to try to keep 17, then we should just leave 15 as it was previously approved.
And I would just add to what Jordan was saying. I was just noticing in the document we're showing you, there's what he was referring to as the criteria. Maybe it was appearing in the footnote, but basically there would be a two-tiered approach whereby if a party was associated with 3% overall abuse over a set period of time, then that would alone trigger an investigation. And then if they were found to be associated with 10% abuse, and that's where they would be in breach of their contractual obligations.
Well, presumed to be in breach, but still have the opportunity
or
to refund.
Presumed to be in breach, yeah. Yep. And so does anybody have any reactions? Because we should first, I guess, react to this, discuss this. Then, Jordan was suggesting, move into whether or not 17 is something that is still necessary, still helpful, or whatnot, or if we made these changes, would it not be?
And just to give everyone a little bit more context, because David and Drew and I talked about this quite a bit before the changes came about. But at a high level, I think the contracted parties and registry operators in particular think it's really, really hard to deal with individual cases of abuse. Registries in particular don't have any relationship with the registrants. Sometimes abuse isn't even propagated by the registrants. It's the outcome of a domain that's been hacked or something like that. And it's really, like, very unclear what a registry is supposed to do about abuse on an individual domain, which is why I think the contracted parties generally push back quite a bit on the notion of, like, an affirmative requirement to, like, react to, you know, do something about abuse on a specific domain. And once again, especially the registries, since the registrants at least have a relationship with the registrant. And so, you know, the registrant has heard of GoDaddy or Upnames or whoever their registrar is. Whereas the registry, they've never had any relationship with this entity before, so it's very hard to imagine, like, a successful engagement with the registrant. However, I think we all agree when we start to see, like, in some of these TLDs that there's 10% abuse or even more, that's not the case of, like, failing to deal with, you know, a few individual cases of abuse. There's something systemic going on there, and that's probably something that's in the registry's control in most of these cases, or in the registrar's control. And sometimes the registries and registrars are affiliated, which puts it sort of in both of their control. But as we saw from the DNS abuse report, so the way that Drew put it, like, abuse is not random. There's a small number of TLDs that really have a lot of abuse, and it's reasonable to believe that systemic abuse is something that registries can and should do something about. And so the idea of the amendment here is to, like, really focus on that. Say, you know, let's look for, as opposed to having ICANN play whack-a-mole and try to deal with specific cases of abuse, which is both sort of ineffective because it's hard to, like, figure out exactly what a registry should be doing, and ineffective because dealing with one field, one domain name at a time is not a good way to deal with systemic abuse. Instead, if we shift the focus to dealing with these systemic issues, and specifically set some quantitative thresholds by which the community sort of thinks, you know, if we look around and we see there's basically no sort of what we'll call normal TLDs with more than 3% abuse and certainly not more than 10% abuse, setting some thresholds where ICANN automatically starts looking into it, and then subsequently where we sort of say, hey, if you get 10% abuse, you're probably doing something wrong. You need to show us, like, what proactive steps you're taking. You need to show us that the finding is incorrect. Otherwise, we're going to assume someone else can, you know, that you're not living up to your obligations, and make it so ICANN doesn't have to lay out a stronger case, just to give them another tool with this presumption of breach. So that's the idea, is to sort of flip how we think about dealing with abuse, which I think also should address, like, then it's hard for me to understand why we need a third-party mechanism if we give ICANN these sorts of tools in order to address the sort of core problem that we're trying to get to here.
Thanks, Jordan. And so then, yeah, moving on to David jumping in on the DADRP. Oh, who's that? Yeah.
This is Cosm. Can I jump in here?
Of course.
Yeah. So Cosm, for the record, just to extend what Jordan is saying, my view of it is that this is an intent to stop where the RARAA agreements do not work. Because right now, under the rules, the registry and the registrar must have agreements to that speak to DNS abuse and malware and all of those things. When it rises to the threshold we are talking about, it means that those agreements are not enforced. And the idea, as I understand it, is that this VADRP policy is a backstop to those agreements being unenforced. Now, if we look at it that way, we could see that we, with my suggestion about recommendation 15, we could literally conflate, bring together 17 and 15, because that's what I thought would be useful here. Now, I can still live with the idea that you keep the two as is separate, and then you keep 15 and 17 without any amendments to 15. That to me would work. Well, I think you'll still need a small amendment to 15, because 15 in this case should simply state that we expect a codification of the VADRP in the contract for registries and registrars. That's my view of things. Thank you.
Hey, Carl, this is Jordan. So you're right in stating that the only obligation registries have today is to include a statement in their downstream contracts basically saying you shouldn't engage in abuse, and only specific types of abuse at that. I think, you know, to the point I made earlier, I think it's very, when you talk about enforcing that agreement, it's actually very, very hard for a registry to enforce that agreement on a, like, individual case of abuse, right? Like, if some registrant gets hacked and malware is put on their website, now there's malware on that domain, what is the registry supposed to do about that? It has no contractual relationship with the registrant. It doesn't provide their hosting. Really, all it can do is, like, take down the domain, which is perhaps, you know, in cases of really flagrant abuse, is maybe the right thing to do. But in the case of, like, some poor website admin that, you know, just didn't do, you know, is using the wrong version of WordPress or something like that, seems pretty extreme to just, like, nuke their domain, because that's the only tool that the registry has available to them. And so I think that's, like, a weakness with the contractual framework that we have today, is that the only sort of expectation is that that registries, like, include this provision that they can't really do anything about, and then we all get sort of upset on, you know, the registries are upset, they have this obligation, everyone's upset they're not enforcing it, but it's like, what are you going to do about it? I think that's very different from the cases. It's like, the problem with .science is not that half of the registrants got hacked because they were running a bad version of WordPress. The problem with .science is that organized abusers, like, realized that they can get domain names for, like, 1 cent each. They used the tool provided by the registrar in order to generate a bunch of, like, random domain names, and then they went and registered them en masse for the specific purpose of abuse. Right? And so the registry can do something about that, right? Like, they can look and see, oh, it's a huge chunk of, like, thousands of domains that's registered by a bad dude. Turning those domains off is a totally reasonable thing to expect a registry to do. Working with the registrar partner to prevent them from, you know, like, creating this sort of, like, make your spam domains tool, that's, like, another reasonable thing to expect registries to do. But ICANN should have the ability to, like, deal with that mass abuse, and, like, there should be an expectation in the contract that when mass abuse happens, that, like, ICANN can and should be doing something about that, and when it gets bad enough, we just sort of presume that the registry is a bad guy, so ICANN doesn't have to, like, lay out a case to, like, demonstrate the ways that they're encouraging it. But I think we don't need a VADRP as a backstop, right? Like, right now, ICANN doesn't have, there's nothing in the contract that lets ICANN say, oh, the systemic abuse is happening, I'm going to, like, find you in breach. Which, instead, they have to play whack-a-mole, sort of saying, like, well, do you have this provision in your contract? We debate about whether they're enforcing it or not. Sort of done case by case. And so this is just to give, like, ICANN the ability and the presumption that they are supposed to pay attention to these systemic abuse cases, like we've identified in the DNS abuse report. And so I just think, like, we can clearly do that through these changes that are proposed to Recommendation 15. I don't think, like, there's no reason to think that we need an additional enforcement mechanism. As Megan pointed out, like, that's expensive, like, we have to spend a bunch of time and energy creating it. And as Jamie pointed out, it doesn't do anything differently than what ICANN, like, it's just crazy to say, like, oh, ICANN enforcement, go do this. And then if that doesn't work, for some reason, taking it in front of a different panel is going to have, like, a different outcome. It's just adds a bunch of bureaucracy to no point. Instead, we should just make a clear mechanism that allows ICANN compliance to go after these egregious cases, which they just don't have today.
Yeah, everything you say there, Jordan, I understand and agree. I'm just wishing that maybe we can make one small, the smallest addition to 15, and I'm fine with it. I totally agree with the rationale. It makes sense to me what they're trying to do here. And
Carlton, may I ask you to speak a little bit louder, please, Carlton? Thank you.
Sorry, Carlos. I was saying to Jonathan, Jordan, that everything he says, I quite agree with the rationale. It makes sense to me. I would go with it and see what happens.
Thank you. I fully agree with you, Carlton. The logic is flawless.
Drew and David, the fine point is obviously on that last bit about why that other mechanism is so useful in the context of these changes. Do you want to address that directly since that's where the discussion's going on?
Yeah, sure. I can chime in on this. So I was going to go back to what Carlton had said just before Jordan had come in there, where you were saying about the, you know, that you thought take out the new modifications to Recommendation 15 and keep in 17, which is effectively what, you know, you've said, Jordan, that if that those were sort of put in there as a replacement for 17, and it's all into the effectively the enforcing the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, we're beefing up the clauses or indicating we want them beefed up. So I'm okay with that at the end of the day, if we do go down that route. I think what you've put in 15 is more helpful and puts a little bit more pressure on where we want it to go, but I still think Recommendation 15 has that in there, suitably on the version which we've agreed. So the version 15, so Recommendation 15, as we agreed previously, is okay. It's a little bit weaker. But it's still pretty clear to me on what that's doing and where that's going. And I think coming back to the, you know, effectively whether we need a DADRP or not, which is what we've discussed for 6-9 months, I suppose. And we had the sort of majority of you that we did and the minority, which we didn't. And so we've got your, minority, statement there, which is what we'd gone through, Drew and I, and tried to amend Recommendation 17D. To sort of cover off some of those points, and as well, I should just sort of state there, we went in circles around Panama because we were liaising with ICANN. In many ways, we've compared this to the PDDRP for trademarks. So we were trying to get in language where that was put in place in a fast track manner. We thought the PDDRP, so we'd put in language there, which people haven't seen, where we were trying to put in the DADRP happening earlier, ahead of any amendments to the contract, because that's what I'd understood or we understood at the time that was possible, and it turns out that that isn't possible. So that wording has gone in and come back out, which is where we're left with the recommendation D as it stands, and or 17D. And I suppose I mean, I I hear exactly what Jordan says, and I mean, I think everyone on the call here doesn't like, and I mean, you have to be pretty stupid to stand up, I suppose, on the CCT review team and say, we think DNS abuse is great, bring it on. So we're clearly all in line there, that we don't think DNS abuse is great, and we should do something about it. From my point of view, which is where when we started looking at the DADRP, there's a clear weakness in the current agreements which are in place. And as Jordan says there, you know, there's an obligation to say that you should not engage in abuse. But that isn't enough for ICANN compliance to deal with the systematic abuse as we're seeing in .science, .top, and the ones which we've identified. And the fact that they've been alive and around since before we started the CCT review team, and 2.5 years after we've started the CCT review team, they're still there with high levels of abuse, strikes me as something which I actually find completely unacceptable in the area which we live in, because you're just letting that DNS abuse go on, and everyone's saying, well, we can't do anything as ICANN compliance because the contracts don't allow us to, and registries saying, well, we can't do anything because we don't have a contractual relationship, and everyone sort of seems to be saying we can't really do anything, we can maybe do it on an individual basis if people complain, which is what we go around doing on an individual basis, complaining, and it takes a lot of cost and resources. So that just seems to me as a situation which shouldn't be there in the next 5 to 10 years when we're looking at where we're going in the internet and DNS. So the fact that there's the clear weaknesses in the current agreements, what we do agree on is that it would be good to get those amended, and that's where we think that's exactly the way it should go. But the idea of the DADRP is an additional avenue, and it's analogous, as I said, to the trademark PDDRP, effectively to empower an ability to address systemic DNS abuse. So, and I think it's worth it. I mean, again, you've got to look at the DADRP. We are proposing that it should be considered by the community. So we may find a community battle going on where the community says a lot don't want it and others do want it. We've had a lot of positive support for it. So we're proposing at the end of the day saying the community, you know, we should do that. I think it doesn't detract from the contractual aspects. I think it actually shines a light on it and focuses on the weaknesses that are there. And it provides another means, an additional means. And again, take on, yes, potentially additional bureaucracy. And, you know, I understand, John, you're saying, you know, we don't need a third-party mechanism. But if we have that in place and we said, yes, we don't need third-party mechanisms, we wouldn't have the UDRP. We wouldn't have the URS. We wouldn't have the PDDRP. And they're always resisted. The PDDRP was resisted tooth and nail by registries and registrars. Because it was something which was going to be abused, etc. But look at the result of it. The result is there. It's been around since the new GTLD program. It's never been used, but there is no TLD out there which has 10% or 50% or 30% of their zone file infringing trademarks. So maybe it hasn't worked whatsoever. Maybe it's really worked incredibly and registries have thought we're going to have a real issue with this. Nobody knows, but it was put in place. Yes. It took a bit of time to put in place, and I was on the IRT drafting it, and then it went through various sort of redrafts. But it was there, and it's put in place, and I think it serves a purpose, and it's been effective in serving that purpose without even being used. So this, to me, is just analogous, and I just find, to be frank, the DNS abuse worse than the trademark abuse at the end of the day because of what goes on, and we seem to turn this blind eye to it. And it's just too easy. It's a bit like global warming. Hey, something a bit similar to that. So I just feel we should be putting something in place or suggesting that something in place, and that the community looks at that and goes through and looks at the pros and cons. And that, to me, that pure focus on that will be a benefit to everyone really addressing the contracts and making sure that the contracts have what's necessary. Because the contracts are supposed to have what's necessary now, because it's in there, and a registry should not engage in abuse. But it happens, and we struggle to do anything about it. So that's my issue. So as we, you know, that's beating the dead horse, I suppose, following on from the what you put in there earlier. Yes, it feels a bit like beating a dead horse in the other way around, because we're just not able to deal with it. So this might be a way of dealing with it, and maybe it won't. But I think it's worth a shot to be seriously considered. And I think it's something which is quite good that the CCT review team puts it forward as one, even if we've got a majority-minority. It's focused, people have the focus, and we say there very clearly it needs to be specifically recommended that the ICANN board prioritise and supports community work to enhance safeguards and trust due to the negative impact of DNS security abuse on consumers. So I think there's a lot of stuff in there which I do feel is very good and very useful. And again, when you read through on the details, etc., it's not something which kicks in and early on before anybody else has done anything. It's a procedure which is, the idea is it applies when ICANN compliance, and it's in the details if you want to read in that, ICANN compliance is unable to resolve a complaint related to DNS abuse, and the registry operators, registrars, are identified as having excessive levels of abuse. So it's when compliance can't, for whatever reason, and we have these examples where compliance has not been able to deal with abuse at the registry level, where it's new GTLDs, but we've succeeded in taking down the DNS abusive domain names across numerous CCTLDs without any issue. So why is it that the GTLDs, certain GTLDs, won't take it down? That to me is the issue. And if ICANN compliance can't get it taken down, then that would be the situation where this would kick in and hopefully would succeed in taking it down if ICANN compliance doesn't have the powers to do so. So I think it's a two double process, and I think it's beneficial and stronger by having both, is my view. But over to anybody else.
And we have a queue. We have Jamie and Jordan.
Thanks, Saul, and thanks, David. I don't think anyone disagrees that DNS infrastructure abuse is a problem, that it is perpetrated on a systemic level by a handful of contracted parties. So then the question is, how do you deal with it? And, my concern is that a DRP alone that is not based on new substantive obligations is like bringing in the National Guard without any weapons. They can't do anything because they have no new rules to enforce. So unless the premise is the contractual compliance department is falling down on its obligations or on its responsibilities to enforce the contract, which, this group may find, and I would be the last person to stand in the way of that. But bringing in a new DRP, absent new substantive obligations on contracted parties, is going to accomplish nothing except cost. It's form shopping with no new rules. If there are new obligations that are brought in as a result of the recommendations, and they are put in place, then in that instance, it may very well be appropriate to have a separate panel that takes on, for example, complex cases, new cases, issues of definitions, that contractual compliance is not in the best place to adjudicate, similar with the rationale that went along with the PIC DRP. The PIC DRP was not just a new panel. It was a new panel that was set out to adjudicate new obligations. And there are some of those obligations that everyone agreed were outside of ICANN's remit, and so ICANN contractual compliance may not be in the best position to adjudicate those. So, again, to be absolutely clear, I am not going to vote in favor or against a recommendation that includes a DRP, but I do think that investing in a DRP that does not have added obligations to enforce is a waste of the community's time and money. Thanks.
If I could, just on that, Jamie, David here, just on that point, how, I mean, on that if that argument is taken and followed through about the you know, it's the additional cost to the community, et cetera, then we wouldn't have had a PDDRP for trademark enforcement, would we? Because that was created in a similar
way. But again, it's not the cost alone. It's the cost, you know, is it offset by benefits? And with the trademark stuff, it was offset by benefits. The UDRP, the URS, the PICDRP, the PICDRRP, all those, have, you know, they're not just forums that exist in a vacuum. They exist to enforce certain specific obligations. With this one, you know, unless the contract is supplemented and amended to include new obligations on contracted parties to address DNS abuse, you have a forum with no mandate.
Which I get that, but again, it's being proposed. We're not sort of drafting it. We're not putting it together. So it's proposing it to tie in exactly as you say. This would be the way it would be put into place, and it would have those separate contractual terms. But it seems to me way too early for us to be delving into that here and now. And when we looked at the PDDRP proposed in 2009, that was proposed, and there was no discussion then about we can't do it because, you know, those terms didn't exist in the contract then. They had to be changed. So it didn't, but it didn't stop us doing a PDDRP. So here, to me, it seems we're even that step ahead of it. We're just saying, hey, guys, we should do something like this because something needs to be done. So a DADRP should be considered. We're not saying it has to be done, has to be put in place by whatever means to do this, should be considered by the community. And if the community turns around and says, actually, no, there's no need whatsoever because we agree everything needs to come into the ICANN clauses and they will be brought in, then everyone looks and waits and sees, and if they're in there, they're in there. And then if they're not in there, people will turn around and say, oh, we should have had a DADRP, or we should have had those clauses put in specifically relating to the DADRP. It does feel like I struggle with it because the two parties to the contract are the registries and ICANN, and neither want this. So I get it. Because it's somebody else.
To be very clear, it's not. I'm not saying we don't want it. There's a logical sequence to this. That and one is you create new substantive obligations or requirements, and then you think about how to enforce it. You don't put in an enforcement mechanism and then later say, oh well, maybe we should have something for that enforcement mechanism to enforce. And so what I'm suggesting is that the emphasis and now speaking as contractual compliance, it would be great to have new powers under the contracts, and then we can enforce them, and we would have no problem just with the PIC, like with the PIC DRP, you know, for some of those to either at the complainant's discretion or at our discretion to flip those over to a DRP, but only after there are new requirements to enforce by either us or the DRP. So to be absolutely clear, I'm not saying that compliance should always have the first shot. I am not saying that at all. I'm just saying that there should be new, it would make sense first to focus on beefing up the obligations. Once that's in place, then looking at, if those get in place, then look, for the community to consider, at the same time or afterwards, beefing up the enforcement mechanisms. Thanks.
So I know the line is forming for, I know Jordan had his hand up and then Jonathan raised his hand. Maybe Jordan's hand's not down. Really quickly, just wanted to respond to you, Jamie, and along the lines of some of the other comments. I think that, at least from my perspective, I completely agree with all of that. So perhaps part of the issue is the way in which DADRP, the proposal has been worded, has been a little bit like a Frankenstein in the drafting process, which I know we don't even actually, we still have 15B on the screen, but on VADRP. But, you know, at one point we were looking at the prospect of this being a mechanism that could actually go into place quicker than what would be required to amend the contractual language for ICANN compliance to get the powers we all agree ICANN compliance needs. However, then looking into that, we realized that was not the case. So therefore, now with the most recent version of the DADRP, the intention is to have those substantive obligations in place and then the DADRP to be another mechanism to enforce such obligations, rather than the DADRP being an enforcement mechanism in search of a purpose or in search of language. And to David's point, since we can only propose that such a policy be considered and then the actual policy work would go on to the community, you know, I guess what we're trying to emphasize is the two parts where the DADRP would serve as an additional mechanism if ICANN compliance is unable to address the abuse. And so, for example, perhaps in circumstances like you're describing, Jamie, where it's something that's so complex that ICANN compliance is ill-suited for it, and then also to serve as the deterrent effect that David was noting, which I think really, for some of the reasons that Jordan is opposed to it, would probably serve as a deterrent effect. So with that said, just so we kind of solve what we need to solve today on the call, I guess right now we should quickly discuss, regardless of whether a DADRP exists, should 15B or should 15B amended, or should we keep what we already had? And then if 15 should not be amended, then that's where we could, perhaps then use some of these proposed amendments to 15 in 17, one way or another. And so I think that there's absolutely consensus, because we had this unanimously adopted before, that contractual language needs to be amended in some capacity to give ICANN compliance the power to go after systemic abuse. And so I know, you know, Jordan's intention with his proposed amendments, and then David has some language in here too, was, of course, then we absolutely would not need 17. But I think we should look at 15 on its own with these amendments. Do we like these, yes or no? And then move on to the merits of 17 and whether we will go forward like last time with a majority adoption minority statement, and then Jordan would update that minority statement, or what our thoughts are on that. I'm sorry, background noise. And Jonathan, you can go ahead. And then Jordan.
Oh, I Jordan had his hand up first, and I think put it down and back up again. So Jordan,
if oh,
you can,
okay.
I don't know where we are. I was going to ask a couple of questions. I guess I'll go ahead. I'm sorry. If this is a cart and horse problem, as Jamie has represented, does it make sense to mention the potential need for a DADRP in the details of 15 as a potential additional enforcement mechanism if 15 is accepted? I mean, maybe the question for David, and I'm not sure that I understand it, is if we don't get 15, is there a basis for the DADRP? In other words, is there something in the contracts today that a DADRP would be attempting to, provide additional enforcement for? Or is the usefulness of a DADRP dependent on the passage of or the acceptance of or the implementation of 15? I guess that's the question that I have coming out of Jamie's discussion. I don't know whether to ask David that now, but that's what I that's what I thought I heard from Jamie, is that in a sense one is dependent on the other, and if that's the case, is it just a linguistic issue of saying if such updates are made, then it's possible that an additional enforcement mechanism may also be necessary, and that David's point would be, let's not wait 7 or 8 years from now when we've found out that we wish we had it, to put it in place, but make it dependent now. So I think, I guess that's a question for David, is there something, if there was a DADRP in place today, would it have contract provisions that it could act upon? Or are they dependent on the implementation of Recommendation 15?
I think it's a possibility, certainly, to look that way. Certainly happy to think about it and think through it. I suppose where it's where I wish it does feel like chicken and egg. It would be nice if we could have a DADRP in place now, and that's where we did move to, almost on the argument that if the system isn't doing what it's supposed to do and compliance had got difficulties today, then could we not put in place a DADRP to deal with those issues until we can amend the contracts appropriately? And that's where we were a few months ago. And we seemed to be saying we could go down that route. And then we kind of discovered we couldn't. And I'm still not quite sure why we can't, I have to say, because I get lost by it all. That's kind of the argument. It's not in the contract, so we can't have it. But it almost sounded from what you're saying there, Jamie, that maybe there is a way of having it in some place where compliance is helped by a DADRP, which is put in place now on the existing
contract. But
only if
there's new substantive obligations as well.
Yes, I mean, how could we do something or propose something like that? Because whichever way we look at it, the way I struggle is we're having a DADRP and or contractual amendments, which are 2 to 6 years away. So we just don't do anything for 2 to 6 years, and I just struggle with that.
But even if that's the case, having a new DRP is not going to make anything any better if there's nothing for them to do that compliance can't do as well.
But I mean, could the DADRP not be? It would be addressing a situation where we didn't have before, because we didn't have registries with such concentrated levels of abuse. So instead of dealing with the one by one, as Jordan says, that which is the difficulty for registries and for complainants, we have this situation, you know, given the situation which exists, how do we deal with these concentrated DNS abuse TLDs, because we're just not dealing with them. They're still there.
Understood, but a new enforcement mechanism that doesn't have enforcement powers isn't going to help the situation.
Because the enforcement powers would need to be built into the RAA, yeah?
Right, if that happens first, that makes sense.
And is there no route where the DADRP is discussed and saying, yes, well, actually, we could put in place a small amendment which gives it the powers in a similar way to the PDDRP, which has a number of powers, going through from sort of blocking new registrations, blocks new registrations first, I think, and then potentially can stop renewals or move off renewals, and ultimately can end up with the nuclear option of a TLD having its, you know, accreditation withdrawn. But obviously it never goes that way because things happen before then. Is that something which we can ever envisage, to get something in place earlier where we have an EPDRP putting something through and something in place there to, in the meantime, whilst we look at the complete redraft of the IARA in due course, whenever that may be?
So I'm not sure I completely follow, but I think what you're saying is you do have some new rules, obligations in place first, before you have a broader overhaul. And again, you know, if you do that and those get put in place, then, you know, having a DRP afterwards is a reasonable thing for the community to consider. But putting the DRP in first with nothing that it can do more than compliance can do currently, it strikes me as a wasted resource.
Yeah, and I don't think there was the intention of necessarily putting it in place before any contractual arrangements, or, you know, because the RAA, whatever was, I'm just trying to think here, was that was amended for the B, this is where we came across the issue, that was amended so that the PDDRP could be implemented. So that was when that amendment took place. But the PDDRP, the problem is that the PDDRP had gone through from 2009 to 2012, 3 years of consideration. So it evolved into a way where it could then fit in and be put into the contract. So that's why I think here, that again, seems to be that if the community is able to look at this and say, yes, we can see the pros and cons of a DADRP, similar to the PDDRP, it's worked upon, and then when the contracts are amended, that's when it's plugged in. And if we can amend a contract or put in place a change in the rules now before the sort of the more thorough overhaul, then we've managed to do something quicker and better to lance out some of these TLDs. So I suppose it just depends how we can phrase that and put that in. But I mean, that could go then in as a footnote, as you say, Jonathan, to recommendation 15, and we sort of try and reword this into that. But I don't know how we do that.
Yeah, quick question along those lines of what's been proposed so far. Would there be consensus if 15 was amended with this language, and then as Jonathan, maybe Jordan as well, I think we're alluding to, or maybe even explicitly referenced, we would then have in a footnote of this a reference to the fact that a DADRP may be another mechanism that should be considered to enforce such new contractual provisions. And then we would still have 17, but 17 would be predicated upon the part if after the adoption of the prerequisites in 15 and consideration by the community of which mechanisms are necessary to address or to tackle the systemic abuse, a DADRP was considered. We recommend a DADRP. A DADRP should, address the following things or look like this, and basically have kind of what we have for 17 in place, but in a much more predicated way, because the DADRP, of course, would have to enforce something, and what we're talking about is it enforcing 15, and what I think we all kind of agree is that ICANN compliance should have these powers, and so then this would, of course, be if the community thought the DADRP would also help in enforcing these things. Would that be something we could have consensus on as a team?
So this is Jordan. I'll jump in and just sort of say a couple things that have been queuing up in my mind for a while. So first of all, to David's point earlier that we have all these like extra ICANN compliance abuse, and Jamie mentioned another one, which is PICDRP, but we have PDDRP and URS and UDP. All of those are because we decided as a community that ICANN compliance was not the right forum to adjudicate those matters. There's no part of the contract where you get a second chance to enforce it if you don't like what ICANN compliance did. And that's, I think, fundamentally the problem with the current proposal for the DADRP, and that's actually how you guys keep talking about it, which is like, oh, well, if ICANN compliance looks at it and they don't, like, actually do anything about it, then we want to be able to, like, run and tell mommy that ICANN compliance is doing a bad job and have someone else do their job instead. And so there's no precedent for that. It's not the case that, like, in the URS, that first of all the registry takes, like, registry or that ICANN compliance takes a look at it, and then ICANN compliance can't decide whether there's trademark infringement or not, and then they punt it to the URS. No, we decided as a community ICANN compliance is not a trademark enforcement body, and so therefore trademark disputes should be adjudicated outside of ICANN compliance. And that's a totally reasonable step to take. If we wanted to say that ICANN compliance is not the right body to adjudicate topics of DNS abuse, I think that would be weird. I think this is one of the few things that, like, I think we mostly agree that ICANN is actually responsible for with its security and stability mission. But if for some reason the community decided this was not within ICANN compliance's remit, then it would be totally reasonable to say, like, okay, this sort of dispute is not going to be resolved by ICANN compliance. It's going to be resolved by someone else. I think that's a reasonable decision that the community could make as part of deciding how we want to deal with the systemic abuse problem. What I don't think is reasonable, and what I don't think any of the contracted parties are ever going to think is reasonable, is to first of all have ICANN compliance decide something, and then if someone in the community doesn't like it, then they get to bring a second case in another venue and go forum shopping. And so I think it sounds like we all agree, and I think we should focus on it, that, like, ICANN, like, there should be a contractual provision that does something about systemic abuse. That provision does not exist today. And so when we talk about the fact that, like, ICANN's not doing anything about systemic abuse, well, it's because they can't, because the contract doesn't say anything about systemic abuse today. And so we want to deal with that. Like, let's create contractual provisions that deal with that. We can make a footnote that says if, as part of considering how to implement that provision to allow ICANN to create a contractual obligation to registries and registrars to, like, deal with systemic abuse, if we decide that the right forum to adjudicate that is not ICANN compliance, then we could create a new DRP. I'm fine putting that as a footnote. I still think that's a little weird, because I do think that it seems like something ICANN compliance ought to be reasonable at resolving, but we could flag that as something that the community can consider. But I don't think we should propose a standalone thing that's, like, second fiddle to ICANN compliance that other people get to invoke when they think ICANN compliance is doing a bad job. Every dollar and every hour that the community spends trying to set up a DADRP is a dollar and an hour that is not going towards ICANN compliance doing a good job. There's, like, finite resources. I think we're very aware today that ICANN has finite resources. So I don't understand why we'd spend a ton of money setting up this new dispute resolution procedure instead of just giving Jamie, like, two more people in order to, like, do a better job, like, making sure they have time to, like, track down these compliance cases. So I just, like, 15, like, seems to address, like, everything David and Drew say they want to fix is addressed by 15. Like, 17, like, sure, you could do it, but there's no reason to. Like, 15 should solve the problem. If we don't think 15 is going to solve the problem, let's keep working on 15. But I don't think we need to add another process that's just going to be a distraction from the problem we're actually trying to solve.
And just, David, I mean, there's a lot in that which I'd comment on, but I suppose I don't see how giving Jamie two more people from the money saved by the community not doing a DADRP resolves anything. Because I haven't seen anybody saying that Jamie can't do it because of not having enough staff. So don't get it.
Can I jump in? I raised my hand, but I'm not sure who's looking at the queue.
Go ahead,
so I've been listening to this and also have read the arguments, and here's how I see it, and people can jump in if I'm wrong. But what I hear mostly is that, to echo Jamie's comments, that the concern here is that you want to have authority in the contract first to deal with this issue, new provisions that actually create an obligation to meet, therefore you can enforce it. And that is the sequencing problem that Jamie is concerned about. And as I hear it, Jordan is concerned about also that there not be this extra process that hasn't lived in the contract first. In terms of how we then deal with recommendation 17, if all of that is accurate, and I'm assuming that it is, then I think the proposal in 17 then really should live as part of 15, whether it's a footnote, whether it's an addendum, a reference to an appendix. But it does seem to me that instead of making a contingent recommendation, which I think would be a little odd and inconsistent with our current approach, we want to have all of this living in the same recommendation as something for the community to consider if these contract amendments are in fact embraced and then created, that then this could be another amplifying alternative. So that's my suggestion, because it seems like there is a lot more that we agree about than we disagree, and it's really where this extra process should live. If I've, you know, mischaracterized anyone's position, I'll, of course, be corrected.
And I think if you want, David, I could certainly speak to that. I'm not adverse to that, and I think that it does make sense in many ways to join them together, because they are linked, rather than, I'm not somebody who, I don't want to sit there and say we have to have a separate recommendation. And then I suppose it just depends on how much of the recommendation, the ideas of it, get tracked across into the footnote, you know, relegated to a footnote. I can put that in my epitaph. It was just relegated to a footnote or an appendum, an addendum. But then it just depends whether you end up as a one-liner footnote, or you sit there and say you have a whole one-page footnote. So it gets quite complex. But we could lose the recommendation and bring it into recommendation 15. I think we could work through that and figure it out. So I think that's a good suggestion, probably is a good way forward. The other point, just picking up on, it's on the sequencing point you raised there first, Laureen, and exactly as I said, Jamie, and picking up with Jordan, I just saw in the chat a little bit earlier, you'd said, you know, we could have a contractual amendment through the bilateral review of the contract. Is that a suggestion we can make as an interim process or an interim idea, that we have a bilateral review of the contract given these high levels of DNS abuse, and that is what we recommend, because that ties in. That is effectively where we're wanting to go, so we're not sitting on this for 6 years or 4 years or 3 years. We can do something quicker, and if we can do something like that, then can we join and push forward for that?
Hey, this is Jonathan. Thanks, David. I don't know if that starts treading into being too explicit in our recommendation, but maybe that's the place to do it. But that might, again, just come down to language, that we suggest that that this needs to happen sooner than normal processes, and that one way to do that might be that sort of language that we're trying to scrub into the recommendation, is to do a bilateral review of the contract and look at adding these additional obligations on registries and these changes of presumptions. And then as part of that, and, you know, parallel to that should be a discussion about whether or not an additional enforcement mechanism is necessary, or that we believe that with additional mandate, compliance would be capable of handling this. It's we can probably phrase the recommendation in that way so that it gets some prioritization and get better of the community, and we can make it a prerequisite to deal with prior to any subsequent procedures, which I think will bring people to the table. Since there seem to be a few people itching to get some more strength in the Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so I think it's fine, Jonathan. I was just saying on chat, I can take a stab at pulling 17 and into 15. I actually think it would be super helpful to talk about the substance of 15, because that is the proposed change to give more contractual teeth to systemic abuse. Jamie said earlier that he would love to have more powers in the contract or more requirements in the contract. So I would be particularly interested if he has feedback on the proposed changes, the thresholds in particular. Is that a useful mechanism in order to allow compliance in order to engage these sorts of problems? I know Calvin separately was expressing concerns about the thresholds. Like, it would actually be really useful to talk about, as opposed to like talking about the enforcement mechanism, which we've spent all of this time doing, like, what do we think about these actual changes that are intended to allow ICANN to deal with systemic abuse?
Jamie, are you in a position to give feedback on that?
Not really authoritative. I can tell you that, you know, as you all know, that the DAR is based on publicly available RBL feeds, and would hope that, you know, leveraging those RBL feeds, which are publicly available, would address Calvin's issue. You know, whether it's 3% or 10%, I'm not in a position to say. I think we'd be great to get some operational security folks, ESAC or Okto, get their view on what the right number is.
Yeah, I guess, Jamie, it's as opposed to the numbers, it's more the question of is it a helpful sort of compliance framework to think about having thresholds at which you sort of say, like, aha, you're above X percent. That means I should probably be paying attention to this, and you're above Y percent, and like, oh, we're just going to assume you're a bad guy at this point.
You know, absolutely. I mean, the way we are looking at the DAR list is, you know, seeing that a handful of registries and registrars are responsible for a large majority of reported DNS abuse, and that helps us focus resources. And will continue to help us focus resources going forward. I think that logic holds generally for determining a threshold of abuse level for a contracted party. I just I really like the idea of using an outside feeds or outside sources, but that would help contractual compliance a lot and determining who to go after and on what basis. So I don't have an opinion on whether that, you know, that magic number is 3% or 10% or 2 RBLs or 20 RBLs or, you know, percentage of abusive domains under management, you know, according to DAR. There are lots of ways of getting at it that some which are probably better than others, and I'm just not in a position to say which, but I think the community would be.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think the idea is that we're not going to like set definitive thresholds or say which list to use or anything like that, but roughly say we should have this sort of approach that focuses on systemic abuse and that there should be thresholds to allow sort of a clear guidance to both compliance as well as registry operators as to sort of like here bounds that we think are reasonable to be operating in. I think it's pretty easy. Like, we should spend a little bit, and once again, this can probably be implementation as opposed to us. Someone should spend a little bit of time looking at patterns of abuse. I think if we chose 3 and 10%, it looked to me, naively, that, like, no registries, you know, you wouldn't accidentally capture anyone even at a 3% threshold that didn't seem to be part of the systemic abuse. Like, you don't look at any, you know, even some of the, like, legacy TLDs, like Com, Biz, Org, Info, like, have relatively high levels of abuse compared to the average new GTLD, but you wouldn't accidentally capture any of those with the thresholds that we're talking about. They're much lower than 1% in general. But I agree that that's, like, we don't have to sort that out. That's, like, something I think we can clearly punt to the community as part of implementation.
Makes sense to me.
David,
you have your hand raised? Yeah, I do. Thanks. I just wanted to pick up on that, on what Jordan says, and I, both Jordan and Jamie on that, I do agree. I think the threshold, and it's really the first time we discussed that, wasn't it, Jordan, when we had our chat back two, three weeks ago, and this 3 and 10% sort of came up, because I'd thrown out that 10%. Right at the very beginning on the DADRP, and I was expecting to have a discussion several times. We raised it a couple of times, and there was never any discussion whether it should be 25, 4, 3, et cetera, and looking at it, because it's quite a difficult thing to go into. But it is effectively what we're on about. We're talking about systemic abuse. So there has to be sort of some sort of definition of systemic. But then Jamie and I, we had a chat about, you know, whether we don't put a definition in, and then just, again, quite interesting listening to there, John, say, you know, we push that through into implementation. But the paragraph I put out there in the chat about the PDDRP, that's actually quite interesting because it ties in the same way here, because it says in there, whilst it's not possible to define a specific threshold as to what amounts to systemic cyber squatting, the panel needs to take into account all the relevant facts surrounding circumstances. So even back in 2009, when we were on that, we started looking at thresholds, and we got stuck on them as to how you put in place a threshold of what is systemic. So it's a thing which you can go round and round in circles on and never actually get to where you're at, which is quite possibly why when I was looking at this, I was thinking, well, let's have a dispute mechanism which backs up compliance, and let's get compliance contracts beefed up. So just commenting on that. And if we can do something, going back to that thing, where we can consider some sort of contractual amendment or suggest a contractual amendment, on a bilateral review. So if before a full review of the contract, something is put in place earlier on, then I think that would be a great success of the CCT review team in responding to something which, frankly, we as a global, have not been able to deal with. And that, I think, is the issue, because the registries can't deal with it, ICANN compliance can't deal with it, and whether it's a brand owner, because we've tried to deal with it, and we're filing complaints, and we're playing the whack-a-mole, and you look at the cost, and you pull back and go, we can't deal with it either. So if the CCT review team can at least suggest something which hopefully leads to the dealing of it, then I think we'll have done a good job.
Thanks, David. I guess the next action item here is that Jordan's going to take a look at trying to combine the two to make sure that this conversation can be happening in parallel, because a lot of this we're going to head over to the community to discuss, and part of that discussion will be the best mechanism of enforcement of these new statutory provisions. I think built into this is the notion that it should happen sooner rather than later, and I think that that'll be reflected in how we prioritize the recommendation, and it could be that we need to make it a prerequisite because of the urgency of getting this fixed. But I guess the next step is for Jordan to take hopefully very soon a cut at blending 17 into 15 in a way that it isn't entirely submerged, but suggests that they're part and parcel of the same thing.
Does it make sense not to volunteer anyone yet doing that? Does it make sense for Drew and David actually to make the first cut on that, since they're the one proposing it, and I think they have a pretty good sense of the direction this is going, and then Jordan can look at it? It just seems to me that they, as the authors who put all the time and thinking into this, primarily, not to disregard all the good input we've got from Jordan and Jamie, et cetera, would be best positioned to take a first stab at this.
I can speak for Drew, and he'd love to. Sorry, no, that was David.
I know Drew's not on the phone anymore.
No, we can certainly... We'll have to try and do that tomorrow, because I really did want to try and go on vacation for the second week of my vacation. So I'll have to try and do that tomorrow or Friday, but then I'm happy to do that and ping it to you, Jordan, because I think we know where we're going on this. I do find Jordan reasonable, despite anything else I might say.
All right, so I guess the key here is that Jordan will be working on this at the end of the day on Friday, regardless of whether or not he receives something from David.
So okay, that gives them a window. I just would rather see them take a first stab at it.
I agree.
Jordan's going to shorten whatever it is, and I don't want to start with the shortened version. I want to start with what Drew and David see as optimal, and then we can move from there.
Or alternatively, and in parallel, perhaps, Laureen, because I think you're the wise one on this team, you could make an objective stab through on it. So if you feel like you could, I'd be happy to welcome that, because we are going to go at it slightly differently. I know Drew and I will go at it one way, John will go at it the other way, and then we'll hopefully find a meeting. But you might actually get to that meeting point before we do and just say, hey, well, that's exactly what I proposed, isn't it? So feel free, because I think it's helpful, because you are more objective on this.
Definitely done, David.
Okay, everyone will get their ideas to Jordan in the next 2 days, and he will attempt to deliver a consolidated version after that, in time for the first part of next week. Does that work for everyone? End of day Monday. Perfect. All right. We have a plan. Thanks, everyone. It's a good discussion, and it's obviously something that may turn out to be one of the most important things that we're doing, given that a lot of our findings are so soft. This is one of the harder ones, and it would be good to find a viable solution.
Do we want to go back to 12, okay, or since we're clearly going to have another discussion, do we want to just wrap up?
What's 12 about?
We can probably do 12 pretty fast. No.
Yeah, go ahead, please. You're back on Adobe Connect now, I guess, because you've been typing in it. So, all right, excellent. 12, thanks, Jordan.
Sure. So this is just the revised language on the topic of the incentives / disincentives around other types, like non open TLDs. And so I attempted to add some language. First of all, I added the little at the very start of recommendation 12, where it says create incentives, and that says and or eliminate current disincentives. I think that may have been in the last version. I don't remember. But then you'll see in rationale related findings, I wrote like a long thing saying like, here's why no one ever creates restricted TLDs. And some of these are like structural problems in the fee structure. And that's the type of thing that we need to think about addressing. So just to your point, Jonathan, the last time we talked about this, sort of like talking about why the sort of current fee structure works against small TLDs, et cetera. So this is intended just to give sort of the narrative that has developed over the last year or so talking about this topic, to get that captured in the report, to help people sort of understand why we think it's important to have ICANN think about these sort of incentives and disincentive structures, so that ideally speaking, these types of TLDs that consumers expect to exist actually come about. So I'll just leave it at that and see if anyone has any questions or comments.
Radio DJ time. Oh, go ahead, Lorraine.
This is Lorraine. I thought actually this was very good. It really provided those examples about what the disincentives are here and made them much more explicit. So I thought this was a real improvement.
Great.
Does anybody else have comments or questions on it? Because I think we're going to call this approved, absent objection, here on this call, because we have a decent number of review team members on the call, et cetera. Does anybody have an objection to the language as it's written here? It is really just an encapsulation of conversations that we've had, so there's nothing that's shocking here. Now we have two people typing.
The only comment I would make additionally is that the thread about the safety and security of users' personal sensitive information isn't really picked up in the rationale at all. I think in the original version we did explicitly call out one of the it was survey, and there's also been some articles about the public's concern about this, and that seems to have dropped out from the rationale.
Yeah, that may be. I can go take a look, Laureen, and see if there's anything that got edited out and try to put it back in.
Okay, I just think for completeness that thread should also be picked up in the rationale and related findings, because there is a rationale and related findings for that set forth in the report.
Yeah, that makes sense. The original recommendation was in your subgroup, so I'll look to see if I can find anything. If not, I may have to sort of defer back to you and the subteam to figure out where to pick that thread up.
That's fine. Yeah, it should be actually in the section that just precedes this, just in the text.
Yeah, I'll see what I can pick up by taking a look at it.
Okay.
And the history.
The dustbin of history.
Jordan, is that realistic for end of day Monday as well?
Hopefully. I'll try.
I think it's
less
just,
optimistic.
Just going to be a line.
Yeah, if I can find text already that I can copy-paste in, then it'll be easy. And otherwise, hopefully. I'll see what I can do.
Okay, just if you have trouble, just loop back with me.
Yeah, I will.
Okay. All right. I think we're there. So we'll make that addition, either Jordan on his own or together with Lorena, make that addition, but otherwise we consider this to be approved language. Excellent. Next steps. Jean-Baptiste, do you want to take the floor for that?
Yes, gentlemen, happy to do so. Let's just put one slide on screen. So I just wanted to provide an update to all on where we are right now, and just wanted to mention as well that there was that there were some major that there were many updates to the report, and you'll receive today the latest version of the final report. This is what I had prepared before this call, but it has changed a bit regarding recommendation D, but this will evolve in parallel as per your discussions today. So you'll receive today the new and latest version of the final report, and you'll have until the 20th of August to submit your edits, comments, objections, or concerns on the final report. Next week, there is a plenary call scheduled to highlight the changes made to the report and initial call for consensus. I guess there will also be another discussion on the updates made to recommendation 17, the merge between 15 and 17. And after the plenary call next week, there will be another week for you to submit any final objections and a decent report. And after that, so in 2 weeks from now on the 5th of September, there will be a plenary call for final consensus and adoption of the final report, and also we'll be confirming the implementation agents that will remain available once the recommendations are being approved and implemented to help provide input. Do you have any questions on this timeline?
Thanks, Jean-Baptiste. I think this is a pretty reasonable schedule and approach. We had a little editing session here in D.C. that made a lot of just tune-ups to the language and also went through a process of looking at each of the public comments that were submitted and kind of giving them a classification as to how we'd handle them, which I think will be the first time we've seen that in the context of the ingestion of comments. And so there'll be a lot for folks to take a look at when you see this final report, but a lot of it's in the details. So please do give it a read, when GMP circulates it today. So thanks to everyone for your efforts on this, and do take a look through it. But we're very, very close. We've got a couple of things we're trying to get going here. Any other questions or comments? Is there any other business? All right, folks, thanks for getting on the call. We're almost there. Let's push this over the finish line.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.